Hey, if you're listening to that music, then you know this is a special edition of Spiritual Perspectives. That's right, originating from our flagship station KEST in San Francisco and simulcast and archived on ifidknownthen.com. This is Spiritual Perspectives, talking about real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host as we talk, and I want to introduce you to our special guest. Interestingly enough, I just love this quote. It seems like a perfect introduction. A spiritual commitment hasn't always been easy. In college, I developed a raised eyebrow reputation as the only rugby player who didn't drink. What's more, I treated my injuries, we're talking rugby, and illnesses through prayer, which definitely set me apart. But I couldn't turn away from the ideas that were healing me, and I had to keep exploring them. She's going to be here in the Bay Area talking soon, but everybody, I would like to introduce you this morning to Robin Hoagland. Robin, this is everybody.
Oh, nice to meet everybody in the airwaves.
Fabulous. Fun to have you with me. And you actually live on Cape Cod now.
Indeed, which is almost as good as the West Coast. Those of us out here think it's even better.
Yeah, but you get door-to-door delivery of winter, and we don't. We have to visit it.
But I think both of us have a taste for that wide-open view that you get when you stand on the edge of the ocean.
Yeah, absolutely. My father's side of the family is from that area. I remember visiting Cape Cod as a kid. So one comment. You actually, way back in the 1900s, in 1999, you stepped forward and decided that you were going to be a full-time declared, publicly declared spiritual healer in a spiritual healing practice. That's what you've been doing since 99. What brought you to the recognition that you wanted to enter a full-time public practice?
Well, it's kind of funny, Scout, because I've always been drawn towards spiritual themes, real connectedness to the divine. And I was raised in a household with parents from two different churches, so I grew up with an ecumenical background. But, you know, I always saw there was a difference with people who were connected spiritually. And everything in my life really hinged, big moments hinged on deep spiritual insight. I had some incredible experiences as a teenager and then going into college, and I sort of thought that I would just be living this spiritual path on my own, but I began to find that people were coming to me, asking me to help them with their situations, and even though I was really enjoying, I did a lot of freelance writing, I was very invested in learning how to make that a full-time career. And kind of what intruded upon it was other people coming and saying, hey, can you help me? And it was actually my husband saying to me, you know, you get more out of helping others with prayer than you do in all the writing projects you've ever had. And he was absolutely right, because I was seeing the incredible connection that people were finding when they found something important, something spiritual, something true that was turning around a situation in their life. And I thought, well, what would be, you know, more rewarding, more fun, actually, than helping others find their own connections with God?
It's a remarkable moment, isn't it, when you realize that the things that you've been studying that have reached a point where you've integrated them, thinking that they're now just normal, and then you discover that other people find that that's a healing experience, and why would they want to talk to me? And yet the breakthroughs are such an amazing experience.
Oh, absolutely. It's really humbling in many ways to be invited to explore these ideas with others and to witness to and watch their own blooming, if you will, in the sunlight of spiritual truth.
So you're just sort of the sit-at-home, quiet, background kind of person. I'm just reading some notes here. Being part of a larger community has always been important to me. So I've coached youth soccer, visited shut-ins, helped with outdoor worship services for the homeless. I participated in a national ecumenical initiative to encourage younger women in working together on issues of social and economic justice. After Hurricane Katrina, my family and I took hand tools and work clothes and went down to the hard-hit areas and dug there. And then to follow up on that, I went sang hymns prayed in thriving congregations in the volatile Dominican Republic. How do you take a clean spiritual view of life as a healing experience into places where stuff is messed up?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. And it's where you generally find what's true. I think what I've really appreciated about my study of Christian Science is it's demanded that I go deeper than the surface impression. And again, you know, this is really quite a natural idea. If you do stand on a beach and look at the horizon, you know, your physical senses tell you the earth is flat. If you just went on that surface impression, you would come up with some pretty incorrect conclusions. So when you're in areas like the aftermath of Katrina, or I was actually in Congo, in Africa, just right after their civil war concluded, you hear some pretty heart-wrenching stories, but you also find people going beneath the surface sense that what we see with our senses is the totality of life. They're going deeper and they're finding a tremendous connectedness to what is enduring, what is common to all of us, what is connected to an uninterrupted view of life. And what I find, what was so amazing down in Katrina, was to connect with this little church that had been completely flooded, and we went just to do salvage work with them. And, you know, they were so hospitable to us. Here we were going down to help them, and they were like, oh, you know, what can we feed you? You know, they weren't even getting groceries in at that point. They were just so amazingly resilient. And again, it's because they, too, were studying deeply these ideas that the surface events, the circumstances that we face would try to define us, and yet we have to go deeper. There's a wonderful quote that I enjoy from our textbook on spiritual healing that just opens up the healing themes of the Bible. It's Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, written by Mary Baker Eddy. And she talks about we must go deep into realism instead of accepting only the outward sense of things. And I think that resonates with a lot of people who've been searching spiritually.
Robin, say that again. That was just a perfect phrase, and radio doesn't have a rewind.
Absolutely. We must look deep into realism instead of accepting only the outward sense of things.
So where do you go with that? We must look deep into realism instead of accepting the outward sense of things.
Well, it was what you were saying earlier, Scout, about, you know, the chaos, the things that are just in a mess. That's really the outward sense of things. And it's going deeper into the internal spiritual integrity of each individual and really of the universe that is there right now, but it requires a discipline to go past what our five senses are saying. Just like looking at a flat horizon requires us to go past what our five senses are saying to see what's really going on. Go up higher. In that case, you know, you see a realism from a higher perspective that puts everything in its proper relationship.
Mm-hmm. I know there's been a recent survey that I just read the other day that says that the fastest growing religion is being no religion. Not that it indicates that people are having no interest. It doesn't equate to no spiritual interest or practice. It's just there's a whole lot of earnest spiritual activity going on that's not within any particular house of worship. So we're back again to that part that binds us all together.
Yeah. Well, the irony a little bit in that is that religion is a word coming from, you know, the Latin, you know, the same word of ligament, to bind together. And actually finding this kind of an interesting period and a very exciting period to be a part of. There's a lot of rethinking, I believe. When people are not identifying with traditional houses of worship, I think they're rethinking theologies that seem to be rooted in the past and not willing to adapt or evolve their perspective so that you still have something that's time-tested as well as cutting-edge. And so this really rich time of rethinking to find what still sorts out when you go through cultural shifts and changes, what's still rock solid. And I think some of the traditions that are associated with so many houses of worship are to a particular time, to a particular culture, and the literalism that is binding us to those views seems out of step with a world where on your smartphone you can find just about any piece of information in a few seconds.
Definitely, definitely. So you used a phrase that I think is really key here. You said time-tested. Now, I know you've referenced Mary Baker Eddy's seminal work upon which Christian Science is based, but I always like to recognize that she wrote that back in the 18s when the word science wasn't just a throwaway word that was splashed on a bottle of laundry detergent, but science actually then spoke about science, which was the willingness to take a thesis or a theorem and test it to see if you could get repeatable results. So she really wrote this as a science, and you're referring to it as time-tested. Can you give some examples of where you've watched it actually change that external reality, that false vision, and see it bring forward that inner binding, that interconnectedness into that external reality?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things, can we back up just a little bit to talk about what prayer does?
Yes, please.
Absolutely. Because I think it's when we see what prayer is doing to our perspective that we begin to understand why we can look at things in the Bible that were, tremendous insights that spoke to that particular individual, that spoke to that society, that are timeless truths. And you continue to go back and connect with them. So prayer for me as a student of Christian Science is a very, very big word. It is the way we connect with God, and it can be everything from thanksgiving to repetition of, for example, the Lord's Prayer, to communing, to singing hymns, a whole wide thing. But what prayer really needs to do is change us, bring us into harmony with God. And as we allow the fear to subside, the ignorance, which is, shielding us from seeing something, or our own egos, which kind of encompasses that huge idea of sin, we let that yield to what God is and does, and that's going to give a shift in the way we think of things. And as thought changes, experience changes. It's important to know that internal change is going on with prayer so that when you take something from the Bible, say the teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, that profound sense of love God, love your neighbor as yourself, pray for one another, forgive one another, you feel the inward changes. And I would say one of the things that I connect it with is when I was in high school and I was told I had inherited bipolar dysfunction. And, this was something that had absolutely devastated one side of my family. The consequences were alcoholism and suicide. So this was pretty heavy stuff to, load on a teenager. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, as I said, I had parents in two different Christian churches. The medical answers were pretty limited, maybe modification of some of the symptoms, but there's no cure. And the side effects of the medications, that were prescribed at the time were pretty severe. So both my parents had a sense that prayer could make a difference, and they allowed me to explore what I wanted to do with this situation. They were certainly observing, making sure that I was going to stay safe, but they let me kind of explore. And so I did some pretty deep questioning for a teenager. You're being told you're going to have to deal with this the rest of your life. So I was really looking for a reason to get out of bed, and I read really widely. I ended up coming up back to the Bible, to science and health, which was opening up the ideas of the Bible to me, how to pray, how to see these ideas, changing the way I saw myself, changing the way I saw God. And I began to just feel that inward shift, aligning me more with the love of God, the integrity of God, the gentleness of God, the worthiness of my identity as a child of God. And I just began to see shifts in small things as well as large things, until by the time I was done with college, just every last shadow of that bipolar experience had lifted out of my life.
Wow.
In fact, people after college, they can't even believe I was ever identified with that particular label, because, you know, I've had one friend saying, so, you know, so constant, I'm positively boring.
Oh, that's just
it's
a great...
Just a nice...
Go ahead.
No, it's just a nice confirmation that, you know, in the years since, it's just been solid. The sense of health, you know, mental and emotional and physical and spiritual health is solid. So there's an example of ideas in the Bible that were speaking to me, and the prayer that was inwardly shifting the way I was relating to God and taking ownership of my identity as God's child was making that deeper shift, so that the surface really did conform to that deeper reality of worthiness.
Perfect. We're going to break away for just a moment. Robin is going to be here in the Bay Area. You're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. Our guest today is Robin Hoagland. She will be here in the Bay Area, and we want you to know where to find her. So we'll be right back. Hey, you are listening to a special edition of Spiritual Perspectives here on our flagship station, KEST San Francisco, simulcast and archived on ifidknownthen.com. This is Scout Bartlett, your host. We're talking today with Robin Hoagland. We're talking about how changing that inner reality and connecting to that inner reality, you can actually watch your external reality come into a match with that. So there's one word, and I know you've touched on it already deeply, Robin, but I want to come back. One question I always ask, for you personally, what does that verb prayer mean? And because you described an experience of it, how do you know when you got there, as opposed to you're still listening to your own mind making up stories?
That's a really good question, Scott. I think I would say what prayer really does is give me that deep inner sense of peace. It's either an aha moment or an ah moment. And you feel yourself yielding. I think there's something huge about prayer is a balance between yielding that human ego and also taking ownership, spiritual ownership, of the identity each of us has as children of God. Prayer for me is just, it's so varied. I mean, it can be many quiet hours reading, reflecting, staying silent, listening. It can also be in the 30 seconds at a stoplight where I just reach out and say, you know, divine love, what do you see? And what do I need to see? And just really yielding to that. And also, as I say, taking ownership of that clarity. You just feel it as clarity. You feel it resonate in your heart. I think for me that's the most important test. Does it resonate in both head and heart? Is it both an understanding, a logic, as well as a profound sense of, yes, this is true?
So given that your professional practice at this point is a professional practice of spiritual healing, do you find you visit that prayer state, or are you seeking to step beyond all of the yeah buts or all of the I could but I but it die but it? Are you looking to step behind all that mind chatter so that you can basically come closer and closer to that connected state all the time?
Yeah, it's a walk with God. I love the fact that in the Bible the word walk is just constant, because, you know, they didn't ride horses, they didn't drive cars. They were walking everywhere. So when they talk about walking with God, it's really that moment by moment connectedness. And it's not so ethereal or so profound that it's, you know, weird. It just feels like you're in tune with joy, and you're in tune with a positive outlook. You're in tune with incredible generosity of spirit towards your neighbors. It's something that changes the way you look at the world and you walk with it. It's not a, oh, I have to withdraw to this state. Sometimes you take time to be especially conscious of these truths, particularly at times where it feels like the world is throwing all its mud at it, where you do have to just, you know, step back and say, no, wait a minute. And this isn't unusual. You know, pretty much every individual in the Bible had times where they just really felt there was great resistance to this sense of God's goodness and God's love and it being inclusive of all of us.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to the fact that you've gone and worked in the Congo when it was dangerous, you went and cleaned up after Katrina, I was looking through your notes and I discovered that you've got a string of workshops that are specifically youth-focused. So you not only took on the Congo in the resonance of a war zone, you take on teenagers.
Well, you know, I lived with them, you know, 24/7. That's pretty much, you know, in the trenches. So this isn't a theory. So much of what I share in these talks and workshops and interactive activities with youth is coming out of, certainly you and I both remember what it was to be a teenager, so we can see things from that point of view. But if you've been a parent or a mentor or a coach or a teacher, you've also seen it from that side. And, you know, it's one of the most exciting times because so much thinking is going on, so much pushing back of just the blather of what they've been told for why. You know, give me a case. Reason it with me. And that was one of the things I loved doing with our kids, is just reasoning with them. As a Christian Science practitioner, I'm not to get between people and God. I'm loving to support them and lift them up so they feel their own connectedness with God. And that should be something that, again, satisfies their reason and satisfies their heart.
Which brings me to another phrase. I was listening to some, you can find more of Robin Hoagland online. I was listening to one of your talks, and there was a wonderful phrase, everyone in the community, which strikes me as being everyone from youth to not youth, as if there were a difference, which there isn't. Everyone in the community, wherever they place themselves in the spectrum of faith, and you go on to talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, all of us are journeying kind of through this human experience to find what's really true and what really resonates.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us who've had experiences with houses of worship will have had kind of a theological background, but there are many people who would not necessarily feel connected to where they were brought up in or feel connected to what they hear being presented in terms of religious outlooks, you know, in the news today. And yet, you know, these are some of the best, most ethical people you'll ever meet. One of my, you know, great friendships from college is with a fellow who's self-described as an atheist. He's a paleontologist at a university in the Midwest. And yet I would say he is one of the most spiritually minded people I know because he's so thoughtful, so compassionate, so in tune with integrity, that I feel he's, you know, intuitively spiritual, even if he wouldn't necessarily identify himself. So he might put himself at the far end of the spectrum, but I see the way he lives his life very much in tune with the dynamics that animate, you know, true religion.
Mm-hmm. So that's back to that place where many people are identifying themselves as spiritual but not religious. They have a true belief in that spiritual interconnection, but they don't necessarily have a true belief in whichever building they used to get talked at in.
Yeah, and this is the piece where we want to have that balance of really thinking things through. And again, that's one of the lovely invitations I appreciate about Christian Science is that textbook, the first page says the time for thinkers has come. And I really first read that as a teenager, and I was like, that's good, because I don't want it, you know, be the time of followers or the time of believers. You know, I want to think things through myself.
Nice.
So it really spoke to me and allowed me to, you know, kick the wheels of these pretty demanding concepts. And as I said, take ownership of them as they made sense, as I could walk with them, as they could be part of my day, not a state you reach only on a mountaintop. You know, that's lovely, but it's not terribly practical to the things that go on each day. And each day is pretty messy, don't you think, Scout?
There's all those little interruptions of that external reality that keep wanting to convince me that my internal reality is on tilt.
Exactly. So, you know, it's as natural as walking, and as natural as breathing. It's all these moment-by-moment awareness of what's truly going on. And so I would say it's important to be a thinker, but it's also important to share with others also doing that thinking, also reaching towards that spiritual essence. And that's the one value with coming together in congregational worship, is that we have to then live these beautiful things we've had in our spiritual insights. Suddenly, you know, loving your neighbor takes on a very present experience when they've just done something that's not terribly kind, or they've just asked you to do something that's really, you know, kind of a drag. So coming together and worshiping together is actually developing a whole other side of spirituality, which includes that deep sense of how does this help me have more real relationships with my fellow beings.
So you're going to be here in the Bay Area doing a talk about changing the discourse. You've got a Christian Science background, and clearly you have educated yourself strongly with biblical study. Does one need a Christian Science background, or should they have read the Bible before they're going to get what you're talking about?
No, I actually assume people walk in the street with no background.
Cool.
My feeling is there's such common ground in this talk. The purpose of the talk really was to begin to look at the divisiveness and the polarization going on, not just in this election cycle, but also, you know, in local events, in families, in workplaces. There's so many places where we feel a disconnect with one another. And it's that issue that I think draws us together, whatever our background, whether we know a lot about any particular religion or we know nothing, or whether we have complete skepticism that anything that uses the word God is valuable. I love when people come in with all these perspectives. It's a time to sort of think these things through together.
So even somebody that perhaps went to some building where people were God professionals and they came away from it feeling either scarred, injured, or disabused, this would not be a hammer it down your throat sort of an evening.
Oh, I hope not. No, no. I'm not that kind of a person, because I wouldn't want that, you know? And I've done a lot of ecumenical interfaith work, and what I've so appreciated about people who come together, they're very strong in their own faith background, but they're looking at how to connect with everyone with ideas that are transformational. So it's the ideas that bring us together. And I think we're all looking for transformational ideas to overcome the divisiveness. If we've come out of a skeptical background, we can still, I really just talk about stories through all of this, you know, personal stories as well as stories of other individuals who've gone through very difficult marriages, individuals who've had health problems and are concerned about whether they're going to survive them, right down to the divisiveness in local elections, which we had an experience in our family that really taught me how important it is to address polarization.
Mm-hmm. So I want to loop back to just what you were talking about. There's a part of us sometimes that thinks that the only way we could make something change is by making sure the something knew how mad or angry we were with it. And I'll watch people maintain that about a difficult marriage or even about a difficult divorce. There's even a place where it's always where there's such a commonality of get tough and fight. If you've had a physical transformation, you're not talking about staying mad at it. What's the other option?
Healing. And it starts with a wholeness you find within yourself. And then it just is a deep and abiding affection for the wholeness of others. One of the things, this metaphor that I come spiritual lessons in this talk is the metaphor of music. It's such an antidote to this whole sense of winners and losers and zero-sum game, this aggressiveness you're talking about. But music is a whole different analogy where, you know, the guitars are not winning and the drums are losing. You know, there are different things that come together.
Sorry, I was just laughing at that. I love that. It's not that the guitar won and the drum lost.
Yeah. I mean, we have this, winners and losers, that's fine for, you know, Sunday afternoon football, because there's a time frame and you're looking at performances in a very small thing. But community and the political process and family life and work life is not about the fourth quarter or the bottom of the ninth or, you know, stoppage time. It's about ongoing themes. And so music is a much better analogy.
Perfect. So if I'm going to shift into that analogy of music, what do I do with all of that old habit of I need to show it I'm angry before it will know, it or he or she will know how wrong they are, so that they will change because they're wrong?
Yeah. Boy, I have so been in that place. And there was a point in time with within my own family where I was just struggling with an individual, and I came across a sentence in this textbook on spiritual healing, science, and health, and it was, this whole idea of really letting impatient obedience to a patient God to dissolve with the universal solvent of love, the adamant of error, self-will, self-love, self-justification, which wars against spirituality and is the law of sin and death. I haven't quoted it quite accurately, but I've come back to this phrase so many times it's really written in my heart. But it's just, the first time I read it, like, oh, great, I can dissolve that person's self-will, that person's self-justification, that person's self-love, and my life will be so much easier.
Yeah, because their self-justification is wrong, and I'm justified in thinking that.
Exactly. And I had this sort of mental tap on my shoulder, you know, just really that sense of God's love tapping me on the shoulder and said, you know, Robin, it says self-will, self-justification, and self-love. And I was like, oh, darn. And it was a real awakening moment where I went back to the first part of this idea, this universal solvent of love, and love being God as love, the power of God's love. Honestly, Scout, if it weren't God's love, we could not move beyond these polarizations. But it is the power of love that is transformative. It melts our own hearts towards ourselves, towards others, and in the place of that anger and that justification is that tremendous sense of compassion and kindness. And I walk through ideas like this in the talk so that anyone can walk away saying, I get that. I get those examples used. I can do this. I can practice these ideas and help blend other people into a musical theme that incorporates all our voices.
You've got a quote in one of your other talks, Robin, that I just adored, and I'm going to be meditating on it a lot, exploring how the two human models of learning, either learning by the rules or learning by experience, have never been enough. It's only by recognizing how divine love bestows unending and uninterrupted inspiration, wisdom, and grace that we find the guidance we need. And you go on, we find the guidance we need as parents, mentors, and even as friends. I love that whole notion of stepping beyond the models of learning, either learning because of the rules or learning by experience, and stepping into that uninterrupted inspiration. I know that you've practiced that. That's your profession. But I want you to talk to me about the experience when you get out of the stuff and you're back into reconnected with that uninterrupted inspiration. Perhaps even examples in your own healing. You talked about one, but even when you've been working with clients and you watch it break through.
Well, that model that we were talking about is really the parable of the prodigal son. You know, one son goes off and tries everything, and it ends up being disappointing. And the other son is, you know, by the rules, and he feels bitter and angry that he's missed out. He hasn't gotten the fun stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see those two human models disappoint. But what's bringing both ends of experience back to the feast is the tender love of the father in the parable, but it's really the tender love of God, the parent of all. I first saw it in our own family because in working with teenagers, as you say, you know, there were times where I was really caught up in the rules and, did they learn the rules? And really that deep touch, just when you're willing to turn to God, you feel the stringent harshness of your views just gently dissolving. And you see with humility you can come back to that child and you can work with them. There are other times where they've really gone off the rails. We had it's a long experience, but it was an experience where our daughter snuck out to go joyriding with a friend of hers at school and ended up in a car accident.
Oops.
And it was just an incredible, I had felt that things were really wobbly for her at the time, and I'd deeply been praying as a parent for her to feel a beautiful old image, the everlasting arms of love, you know, just around her, around anything above. And that wonderful sense of her being cared for, neither she nor the other kid in the car was injured, though the police could not believe it. I mean, there was just so much damage to the car. And just that she escaped and unscathed, but still there was a tremendous amount of disobedience that still had to be dealt with. And so we had to continue praying, continue to really listen to God's love, not the parental, but how can we help establish this child's sense, own sense, her inalienable rights of self-government, reason, and conscience, three ideas that I love from science and health. Get her to engage with that, and it was really us feeling parented by God's love to help support and strengthen that. And that's the same thing with people who call me for help. I'm literally listening for God to help me support and strengthen that individual's own sense, own connectedness with God's love, so that they hear the answers they need directly.
Perfect. And again, we're back to that recognizing when you get into that place that's that inner quiet or that inner connectedness. So how did you survive being a parent? How often did you have to come back inside yourself to balance between the parent brain and that healing part that is your practice?
It's an ongoing thing. There's no formula. And I think anybody who's looking for a formula is looking for rules, and rules just aren't enough. It's an organic balance, I would say, with listening, an intuition that you follow, self-examination. Oh, my goodness, I think that's one of the most important qualities in prayer. Is how is it helping you examine what's in the stumbling block, the big, huge log in your own eye, as opposed to the little tiny speck in their eye.
Mm-hmm.
And that self-examination just allows us to let go of the obstacles that are keeping us from feeling that all the good that's going on in our lives, irrespective of what's going on the outside.
We had a beep in the line right there. Could you just repeat that last sentence, all the good?
Oh, gosh. All the good that God has already given us, that these obstacles, whether it's our fear or our doubts or our ignorance or our own ego, which is kind of comprehensive of sin, are keeping us from seeing. It's that wonderful sense that those shadows are illumined. If you let the light, that light that illumined the ministry of Jesus, the Christ light, that love of God, light every bit of good in our lives, and it absolutely outweighs or overshadows or overturns the external difficulties that we're facing.
So, in a funny way, you're talking about a balance of, I'll say, experiencing real life, being in real life, and yet not believing that real life or the external is the whole story.
Absolutely. I think it can never be theoretical. And that's, I guess, why I so identify myself with the ministry of Jesus. You know, he walked through all these villages and was confronted with all sorts of human ugliness in terms of, you know, long-standing physical problems, leprosy, you know, hemorrhages, all these things, as well as really ugly behavior, self-righteousness, you know, flagrant sins, adultery, all these things. And yet he never lost sight of the beauty and wonder and glory of each of them as God's children. And that's the staggering thing. You can't just say, oh, we're all beautiful children of God, and then not engage in a way that has to see the truth of it within your own heart. It cannot be words. It really has to be a power of clear understanding, but really the word of God, not just words.
So I noticed that sometimes people seem to get a sort of a, I'll just say, a limited education, and they think that the only spiritual practice that studied anything about this teacher named Jesus is just those spiritual practices that now call themselves Christian or Christian churches. And yet you're speaking of Jesus not just as a teacher in any given denomination.
No. And I think that we need to have a much broader sense of one family. I think, you know, when you were asking before about time-tested, I really do feel that the words that were spoken there and have still been handed down were so powerful because they connected to truth. Truth is universal. You know, just look to its floor for you and me and for anyone anywhere on the globe. There is not a truth for some people. There is only truth. And so when we hear truth articulated in a way that brings healing, and that's going back to the prove it, well, prove those words are true. Well, for me, that's what the ministry of healing that Christian Science espouses, you know, healing right across the board, relationships, health, supplies, finances, the whole thing. Well, everything we face needs a sense of fullness or integrity, that all of those things come together. And when we hear truth, we hear it clearly. We feel its effectiveness. It's applicable. That's why I love that word science. Science is connecting ideas with what's applicable. And there's just a real need to see these time-tested truths that are in the Bible being connected to our everyday experiences in ways that are transformative. It doesn't have to be exclusive to one particular outlook, one particular house of worship. I think every time we're exclusionary, we lose sight of the inclusive, universal, the God of love and truth that embraces all of us.
Perfect. That's a great place. I want to break away for just a second to let you know that we're speaking with Robin Hoagland. She will be here in the Bay Area to talk with you. She'll be doing a talk here in the Bay Area. I want to give a quick appreciation to the Christian Science Churches of Sunnyvale and Mountain View, sponsoring not only this program, but they're bringing Robin to you as a gift to the community. So there'll be no charge there. And here's the details that you need for that. Hey. Key, and you are listening to Spiritual Perspectives coming to you from our flagship station, KEST in San Francisco, simulcast on ifidknownthen.com, and we will archive this program on ifidknownthen.com so you can send your friends or you can come back and listen to it again. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'm your host, but our special guest is the point of today's show, and that's Robin Hoagland. Robin's been talking about the all-inclusiveness, and we've been talking about the whole notions of healing, Robin, and I want to come back because it's very funny. Sometimes I watch people get focused into healing as if the healing or the healing result was the point. So do you think... Yeah, there you go. You got it.
Yeah. We lose sight of what's really the important. You know, that word healing comes from the word wholeness. Mm. And if we're not understanding that it's not just removing symptoms or removing a difficulty... Healing is really that restoration of our own understanding of wholeness, the integrity of creation, the creation of spirit. And that's that inner reality that we've been sort of touching on throughout this time together. So, you know, we really want to connect with that and not to be satisfied with these surface things. There's a phrase a friend of mine uses called, which is this sort of selfish, I just want to remove this problem approach, and it's called IPIG, I-P-I-G, I prayed, I got. Yeah. And, you know, how many of us would limit the power of prayer to just being a little grocery list? No. This tremendous sense of healing is healing our wholeness and our absolute inseparability from spirit, from all that is true and good and whole and complete, inclusive, without seeing or rent. You know, this beautiful sense of our relationship to one another and this inseparability from the source of all, God.
Fabulous. I don't know if I can toss this to you. You've got in another one of the talks I listened to, and you can find Robin online, in one of your talks I listened to, you gave a short four-item description of the nature of God.
Wait, say that again, Scout.
You gave a short sort of four-element description of what you consider to be the nature of God, coming back and reconnecting with the nature of God as understandable... ever-present, inclusive, and reliable.
Yeah.
Tell me about reliable.
Yeah. That's a really tender one because I think a lot of people turn away from religion because they feel they've been gypped. They've been doing what they're supposed to be doing. They've been obedient, and things are still really rough and rugged. And that reliable to me is because I see God as truth. Truth is not changing. It doesn't make exceptions for one person or another. Truth and principle are probably two beautiful terms, Bible origin of them, even if that culture wasn't thinking so much in terms of those ideas as we would in a scientific age, it's still that sense of they would call God the rock because that was the most firm, solid thing they could really think of. But they understood the unchanging nature of God. It's God that is unchanging. That's what makes God reliable. The place where change needs to go on is us. Even if we feel like the world is throwing all these things at it, when we go towards this unchanging nature of God as truth, as love, as life, and find that we are absolutely inseparable from it, we change. And as thought changes, experience changes.
And yet you're not just talking experience changes as in, I walked in with a better attitude so it didn't bother me as much.
Right. No, experience changes in terms of pretty amazing... it's amazing to us. I mean, in the Bible, they're like, they call it marvels. So, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it's something that's so natural. I think one of the things that's so wonderful about healing in Christian Science is that when a physical problem, be it something like a sore throat or something as, you know, aggressive as bipolar, when it lifts out of your life, it's just natural. It's natural to feel well. It's natural to feel full. And so it's a, you know, sometimes you go along, you're thinking, oh, wow, that problem just sort of disappeared from my life as I was getting these clearer views. And you're finding that, like, rugby injuries, like, you know, contagion that I experienced in college, that those outward physical debilities just dissolve because they don't have God's love and truth behind them.
You know what? A solid spiritual healing practice for a rugby player has to be a huge asset.
Well, it didn't help us win every game.
Yeah, but it helped you stay on your feet.
Well, actually, I had a fairly, it was a very interesting spiritual journey. And I would have to say that I ended up gently outgrowing those rugby days. So I loved every element of it. I really had wonderful friendships. But I sort of felt that the heavy focus at that time on, you know, the partying aspects. And here I was, you know, not drinking, not doing drugs, the whole kind of pure view of letting God be the real stimulant in my life. It was fine. They were really, really respectful about it. But I just didn't feel I was having fellowship in a way that was deep and satisfying. And so it was working through some of those things. I was actually an officer of the club. I mean, I was pretty invested in it. But I just felt my own spiritual journey taking me in a different direction.
Perfect.
And it was praying through some injuries, but it was also praying at a point to say, I'm not here to prove this to anybody. I need to keep moving on in a pace that's right for me and that's connecting me with others that understand what's really feeding me deeply.
We talked a little bit about irrespective of the external circumstances, but you had another phrase in a thing I was listening to, Robin, that I'm going to steal it. And that was, you were talking about healing as being establishing yourself of doing prayer to a point of confident expectation. And I'd love for you to expand on that.
Yeah. Well, it comes back to this idea that prayer is not changing God. God is unchanging truth and love. And so prayer is changing us. But it's more than just talking ourselves into it. You're talking about earlier, how do we know our own human voices and doing all the talking. Well, it's getting to that place where we're letting that human voice yield. We're either not talking ourselves into it or doing the yabbit. We're really just listening. We're at that point of listening. And the more you just feel ideas coming to you, those inspirations, whether it's a familiar phrase that jumps to thought, it's winged with inspiration. All of these things are strengthening confidence that God is good, and God is present. And what I would just say is that word faith that gets so overused and so underappreciated is this word, it comes from the Fido, from Latin, faith and confidence have the same root. So we're really seeing that our ability to stand strong when things are tough is fed by the prayer that connects us to the unchanging nature of God, so that we can look at these circumstances around and say, you know, you really just don't impress me that much.
Yeah, look at those circumstances around you and be able to just say, you know, circumstances, you really don't impress me that much. So in that state of...
I can remember, Scott, I just have to, just quickly, I can remember I was standing, I was in the shower and I was watching a very aggressive case of poison ivy just sort of heat up again. And I had been praying so deeply and feeling so connected to God. And I literally said in the shower, oh, argue all you want today. You're not getting between me and God. We're going to have a great day. And I watched those symptoms just dissolve to nothing.
Take that, poison ivy. I am not listening to your superficial external argument. I am standing in the midst of confident expectation. I love that.
And Rob, the shower.
And the shower. Yeah, there we go. There we go. Well, it's some of my best meditation. So we've got about a minute and a half, Robin. If you had one statement that you wanted to hand off to everybody who maybe doesn't even think in terms of a church or a religion as a process that might be useful to them, what would you want to say to them?
I would say that we haven't begun to explore the power of divine love. That love, it describes our relationship to the infinite, to the Creator that many of us call God, and that also describes our relationship to one another. It's not the love that is episodic, that runs from hot to cold. It has the constancy of truth and principle. It is something that has a healing effect on everything we face. It starts with healing our own hearts and then allows us to embrace those within our community, whether that's on a local level, a national level, or on an international level. It really is the transforming power. And we learn more about it when we come together and dig deeply together.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I want to thank the Christian Science Churches in Sunnyvale and Mountain View for sponsoring not only today's show, but for sponsoring Robin to come out and speak. You'll get more information about where and when you can find her. You're definitely going to enjoy it. I certainly wish that we had another hour to talk, Robin. This has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much.
Oh, pleasure to be here, Scott.
And I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. This is Scout Bartlett, your host, and I'd like to ask you two favors. One, treat yourself as a loved one.